דברי תורה לרפואה של אמא מרים בת סורי, אינה רפנלה, אינה רפנלה, אינה רפנלה, רפואת הנפש ורפואת הגוף ורפואתה כרובה לבוא וכן ירסום ונאמר אמן. תזכו לשנים רבות, נעימות וטובות. It is always a great privilege whenever I'm able to make it here to partake in one of the many programs that Chazak is involved in. They have my full support. Rabbi Meirov, all the tzaddikim that are involved are clearly making a difference in Klal Yisrael, especially by Achenu HaSefaradim, and they really are exceptional. Chelam Le'oraita, they're using their strength for the Torah and for God's work, and of course we wish them continued success. They're saving lives by the day, and I consider myself privileged that I'm able to be part of this holy organization. Rabotai, in a few weeks we're going to begin making additions to the Amidah. There are four lines that we add to the Amidah. All of them have a common denominator. They all have the word Hayim. Zochreinu lehayim, melech hafetz b'hayim. Micha amocha ava rahaman, zocher yisurav berahamim lehayim. Uchtov lehayim tovim kol b'nei b'ritecha. Ubsefer hayim beracha v'shalom, parnasa, v'chule. During the high holiday services, we're going to say the word Hayim hundreds of times. And we're going to ask for this concept called Hayim. In English they say it's life. I came today in what I believe is a very fundamental shi'ur to give a definition to what is Hayim. I mean, if we're going to be asking for it, and we're going to be pleading for it, and it's mentioned in every line of the additions to the Amidah, we have to know what we're asking for. The reason why I came to give this shi'ur is because I believe there's great misconceptions, and it needs to be clarified. And I believe the shi'ur must be given a few weeks before the high holidays, because once we get into the groove of the high holidays, already we don't have time to make the proper analysis. So this is a preparation. The question is very simple. What is Hayim? Now once we figure that out, we'll answer a bigger question. What is the purpose of life? When you figure out what Hayim means, automatically it answers the second question, what is the purpose of life? That's a question that must bother all of us. If you're old, it definitely should bother you. Because as life starts to move on, you start to ponder those type of questions. What's the purpose? What are we here for? What's the destination? What's the goal? What's the objective? We used to have a game when we were young. We used to play it in Shabbatot when we were kids. The game of life. Well, this is no game. But the game of life had rules. You had to get from point A to point B. I forget exactly what you had to do to succeed, but the goal was to get to the end. In the game of life that we live in today, we have to know what it means, Hayim. How do we accomplish it and how do we reach it? I'll tell you what Hayim is not. Because we have to do process of elimination. So we zone in on what it is. Hayim does not mean physically living. Although if you'd ask a scientist and a professor and a doctor, they would measure life very simply, according to pulse, according to heartbeat, according to brain activity, according to blood circulation, according to bodily function. Either the patient is alive or the patient is dead. They only understand it on a physical level. That's the way I used to understand it as well, to be honest with you. When I used to come on Rosh Hashanah, I used to always pray, give me life, I want to live. I want to be healthy, of course. I want to live 120 years old. And that's what I was thinking about, just physically living. Make it another year. Make it to another Rosh Hashanah. Give me life, and then whatever we do in life. But the main thing I'm asking for is, I want Hayim, I want to exist. But then I came across the Gemara, and it threw my whole interpretation upside down. The Gemara says the following. Reshaim b'hayehem nikraim metim. That a Rasha, you know what a Rasha is. Rasha is somebody that's bad. Rasha. Well, it says, well, the Rasha in his life is considered dead. So how is that possible? Medically he's alive. Physically he's alive. Halachically he's alive. I mean, if you have a Rasha, he's alive, halachically, which means if I'm a Kohen, I'm allowed to be in the same room as a Rasha. He does not exude Tum'ah. But the Gemara says, yes, he might be physically, halachically alive, but for all practical purposes, according to our assessment, the Rasha is alive and dead at the same time. I said, how could that be? You could be dead and alive at the same time. They said, yes, the Rasha is a perfect example. He's alive, but he's considered mit. That got me thinking that my definition of Hayim is wrong. Because I would have said that Rasha is very alive. He might not be so religious. Fine, he might not be so observant. But he's alive. The Gemara is saying, no, he's not alive, he's considered dead. Then I saw another Gemara to confirm my beliefs now. The Gemara said that a tzaddik, that even after he's dead, he's considered alive. Tzaddikim b'mitatam nikraim hayim. Strange. The tzaddik clearly is dead. He's in a coffin. He's in shrouds. He's buried 6 feet under the ground. He's definitely dead. There's a tombstone. The family comes to visit him in the cemetery. But the Gemara says, don't be fooled. He's alive. So I came to the conclusion that my definition of Hayim is totally wrong. You could be dead and alive at the same time, and you could be alive and dead at the same time. So therefore we must redefine our terminologies. Once we succeed to do that, we'll be able to know what we're praying for. I heard an amazing mashal in the name of Rabbi Mordechai Gifter, alav shalom. He explained once the mashal that the Gemara says in Berachot, that a Jew that's removed from Torah, they compare him to a fish out of water. I understand the mashal. A fish cannot exist without water. So they say a Jew cannot exist without Torah and mitzvot. I understand that. What I don't understand is, why did they have to give the mashal of a fish? For that matter, you can give the example of any animal without oxygen. I mean, I think it's the same by saying a fish out of water or an elephant without oxygen. It's the same point. Both cannot exist. A dog without food. A cat without milk. I mean, why did it have to choose the example of a fish out of water? My gift is said, because something is unique in that situation. Anybody ever went fishing? You take the fishing rod, put a hook, you put bait, you cast it. You have a fish on. You start to reel it up. As the fish reaches the surface of the water, you see it thrashing back and forth, banging against the side of the boat, giving the fisherman a hard time. You see the rod arcs all the way down, and he's struggling with it. If somebody didn't know any better, he'd say, wow, that fish is very alive. Little does he know that vitality that the fish is having outside the water only is an indication to his imminent death. The excitement that he has tells us that any moment he's about to die. Well, Rabbi Gifter said, that's the life of people without Torah. Although they look very, very alive. You see them dancing at parties. You see them jumping around. You see them making all sorts of noise. You see them living a very carefree life. If somebody on the outside would look at them and say, wow, these people are really a lot of energy. But they're like a fish out of water. That enthusiasm and that excitement that they have only indicates that, God forbid, that they're going to expire. It's a fish out of water. Don't be fooled by the movement. The movement is only an indication of a death. Well, if that's the case, we need to understand what is life then. Well, the Gemara gave it to us. It seems life and Torah are connected. Life without Torah is life of a fish out of water. It looks like life, but that life only brings us closer to death. I found the pasuk, which I think is the secret of this whole shi'ud. V'atem adebekim ba'adonai Eloheichem, hayim kolechem hayom. So the pasuk says, hayim, I found the pasuk with hayim in it. Hayim kolechem hayom, God guarantees you. Life to all of you today. Oh, what do I have to do? What do I have to do to get this hayim kolechem hayom? So the pasuk gives us the solution. V'atem adebekim ba'adonai Eloheichem. You need to cling on to God. I could cling on to the shtender. I could cling on to the sefer. These are animate. God is invisible. How do you cling on to something you can't see, or touch, or smell, or feel? Well, that's the trick. God says, if you can figure that out, if you can figure how to cling on to me, v'atem adebekim, then you will have hayim. That's the secret. The question is, how do you fulfill devekim b'Hashem? In order to understand this, Rabotai, I must give you some very important introductions. These introductions are basic Judaism. Unfortunately, people are not so aware of them. But these facts that I'm going to tell you will change your perspective of life, at least as of a Jew. I know when you went to school when you were young, they must have told you that you have a body and you have a neshama. They told you every morning, you say, Modani lefanecha, shehazalta bi nishmati. Then you say, Elokai, neshama, shenatata bi teora. And they told you that the neshama is spirituality. They were right. What they weren't able to do in second grade or third grade when you learned it, they couldn't give you the details. They gave it to you as a general terminology. They said you have a neshama. However, as we get older, we start to open up the Sefarim, HaKedoshim, we realize that neshama is only one part of a larger soul. According to the Mikubalim, the soul is actually made up of five parts. The parts are called Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Haya, Yechida. I'll say it again. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. So you see, Neshama is only one of five parts. But they just call it Neshama as the general term, but it's one of five parts, and then Haya, Yechida. The way the Kabbalists refer that to is Naranhi. Learn the terminologies. Naranhi. Naran, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Hi, Haya, Yechida. Now, those parts are inside of us. But they don't come into us in one shot. They come into us gradually. The Zohar HaKadosh writes, the Ibn Ari talks about it, that when a child is born, at the time of birth, all he has is Nefesh. Nefesh is a small amount of spirituality that keeps the baby alive. But nefesh is really nothing special. After all, animals also have nefesh. The nefesh bahamit, the animalistic part. Goyim, they have nefesh. A baby really is not so productive. Maybe he's like a little baby animal. He eats, he sleeps, he relieves himself. Doesn't do too much productivity. He has nefesh. As the child starts to develop, he begins to speak. 2 years old or 3 years old, at that point, he receives an upgrade called Ruach. Ruach is the ability to speak. Now he has two parts, Nefesh and Ruach, Ner. And then when he becomes Bar Mitzvah, on that day something incredible happens. Everybody thinks, yeah, we make a Bar Mitzvah party to celebrate his 13th birthday, or Bat Mitzvah, I guess at 12. And we're celebrating that they reached adulthood, or manhood, or womanhood. And we make a Seudah, and we put on Tefillin. But what's not so well known is, there is a spiritual change in the frequency of a child on that day. It is on that day that he receives the Neshama. The Neshama comes in at the age of 13 for a boy, at the age of 12 for a girl. That's why we make a Bar Mitzvah party. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, you're supposed to make the Bar Mitzvah party as lavish as a wedding. As lavish. Because it's an incredible day. That's the day you get your neshama. You weren't born with it. It took 13 years for that neshama in order to settle in. So by the time you bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, you now have what's called naram. Nefesh, ruach, neshama. It's as part of you as your arms are part of you, or as your legs are part of you. Now I agree, it won't come up on a CAT scan or an x-ray. Your doctors cannot identify it. Good news is it doesn't take any extra weight to your body mass, but it's a part of you. Now the last two parts, not everybody merits to get. And that's called Haya and Yehida. Those are very high levels. They come in over the course of time. People that involve themselves in high levels of spirituality can get those last two levels. The tzaddikim, the great Hasidim, at the end of their lives, they have those additional two components, Haya and Yehida. And maybe that's why you see some of the Jewish people, they walk around with a high chain on their necklace, knowing that they're not going to get the last two, so they wear the high, Haya Yehida. Maybe that's the kavana. At least they're able to connect to it in the form of that gold chain. Nonetheless, but we all can reach the five levels. All of us are capable to reach it. It's all inside of us. It just depends how much we feed it. You see, we need to feed the naranchi. The naranchi needs to eat. It needs nourishment, just like your body needs nourishment. Now, I know how to nourish my body. I go to a dietitian, I go to a special doctor, and they tell me you need to eat a couple of calories of that, it's a little protein, a little vitamin this, a little vitamin that, keep away from this type of food, you must hydrate yourself. We're well aware today of how to feed the body. I can go to a nutrition store and buy vitamins, and they'll give me supplements. I can order to keep my body balance in check. However, just like you must feed your physical body, you must feed the naranhi. I don't know what it eats, but I don't know what nourishment, I don't know which pill I have to take, which vitamin is going to supply the proper nourishment to the naranhi, to the nefesh, ruach, neshama, haya, yehida. Again, that is just as much a part of you as your body is part of you. As you'll see in a moment, that is you. That is the essence of you. That's even more part of you than your physical body. Pay note. Your physical body has an expiration date on it. Assuming you'll go the full gamut of life, the body cannot sustain more than 120 years of life. The naranchi, however, is eternal. Because it's a piece of God. The naranchi is given to you by God. Where is? Your physical body is given to you by your parents. The Gemara is very clear, the parts that the father and the mother contribute to the physical frame of the human being. It's a physical item given by physical parents. However, the naranchi is God's contribution to the human. And that's a piece of God. therefore it is eternal. So if you'd ask me, who is the person? So I would say, well, define your question. Are you asking me who is the temporary person or who is the permanent person? I said, who's the temporary? Oh, the temporary, that's your body. Because it's temporary. You know, 120 years sounds like a long time. But against eternity, 120 years is nothing. It's a moment. It's fleeting. So if you ask me, who are you? You're that part that's inside of you, that's invisible, like God. And basically, you're made up of five components. And if you don't feed those components, then it's possible that your naranhi is malnutritioned. I'm more concerned that the naranhi is comatose. God forbid that the naranhi is dead. You see, that's what they mean. When they talk about the sha'im living in this world, and they can be dead at the same time, they're talking about the nefesh, ruach, neshama, haya, yechida of the rasha. Since they don't feed it, and since they don't give it the proper nourishment, that part of them is dead. And since that's the essence of mankind, because that's where his eternity lies, if that's not being sustained, so the person is dead. And I guess that's what it also means, that when they say that when the tzaddik passes, he's still alive. Because the physical body, anyway, we knew was temporary. But if he sustained his naranhi, it continues to live on even after his physical demise. Oh, so we're getting warm. We're starting to understand a new part of us. But what I didn't explain to you yet is how do you sustain the nefesh, ruach, neshama, haya, yechida? Well, I have an answer for that as well. There's one answer. The answer is mitzvot. I know you know that. What did you think I was going to say? But I came to explain it to you in detail tonight. Not as you learned in second grade. Consider this an advanced understanding of how things work. Well, how do I know it's the mitzvah? Well, if I would ask any of you, what does the word mitzvah mean? You would say a commandment. I also used to think that. It is true, but that's a very basic understanding. A mitzvah is a commandment, and we have 613 of them. Some of them are positive, some of them are negative. But according to the Zohar HaKadosh, the word mitzvah is actually a synonym for God's name. Mitzvah actually equals Yudke Vavke. A mitzvah is a piece of God. What's my proof? The Zohar HaKadosh says. The name of God is Yudke Vavke. Well, the last two letters of God's name is Vavke. The last two letters of the word mitzvah is Vavke. Well, that's good. Two out of four is not bad. But I want to go four out of four. Well, it's not going to work. Because the first two letters of God's name is Yudke. And the first two letters of mitzvah is Matz, Mem Tzaddi. Close, but no cigar. Well, not so fast. The Zohar HaKadosh writes, and I'll teach you something tonight, that there's many formulas in the Hebrew alphabet. One formula is Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hev, Vav, Zayin. That's reading the alphabet forward. One formula is called Tashrak. That's reading the alphabet backwards. Why would anybody read the alphabet backwards? There's a reason. But the system that I want to teach you tonight is called Atbash. Atbash is that we take the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, and we take the last letter, which is Taf, and they become interchangeable. Whenever I see an Aleph, I can put a Taf in its place. Whenever I see a Taf, I can put an Aleph in its place. The letters have interchangeability. And I can do that with all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. I can start with the first letter, and then I can go to the subsequent letters. Meaning, At, Bash, Gar, Dak, Hatz, Vaf, Za', Has, Tan. You're following? Yam, first letter, last letter, second letter, second to the last letter, third letter, third to the last letter, etc., etc. It's called Atbash. You could probably Google it and learn about it. Anyway, in this system of Atbash, if you pay note, the letter Mem is interchangeable with the Yud, and the letter Tzadi is interchangeable with a He. So actually, the first two letters of Mitzvah, Matz, in Atbash is Yud Ke. So really, Mitzvah is another way of saying Yud Ke Vav Ke. Oh, if that's the case, why do they call it a mitzvah? They should have called it a yudke vavke, because then you wouldn't be able to call it. Meaning, if a person would say, "Oh, I'm going to go do a yudke vavke," you can't say Hashem's name. So, okay, we're going to make it in a way where he can say it. I'm going to do a mitzvah, but a mitzvah basically means I'm going to attach myself to yudke vavke. Ve'atem adibekim b'adonai Elohechem. You know how you attach yourself to yudke vavke? Only one way. A mitzvah. The mitzvah is the physical element where we attach ourselves to Yud Ke Vav Ke. And once you attach yourself to that, the result is Hayim. Hayim to what? Not your physical. But Hayim to what's inside of you, to the Nananhi. To the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Haya, Yichida. That means Yud Ke Vav Ke and mitzvah are synonyms. So it's true, you can't hold on to God. When you hold on to a mitzvah, whatever the mitzvah may be, if it's the ladies, it's Hadlakat Ner, or Afrashat Chala. If it's the men, it's Kiryat Shema, twice a day minimally. Hanachat Tefillin, putting on the Talet, Talmud Torah. These are all mitzvahs. Or better, they're all Yud Ke Vav Kes. And the more you attach to it, and hold on to it, and latch on to it, the Bekim, the Buk, the more you attach to Hayim. Why? Because it is that mitzvah that is the spiritual supplement that feeds the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Haya, Yechida. Now I tell you how. I'm telling you now the Ben Ish Chai said, as well as the Ben Wa'ari. The main part of any mitzvah is the action. Mitzvot must be fulfilled actively. It's not enough to philosophize about the mitzvah and to dream about the mitzvah and to pontificate about the mitzvah. At the end of the day, you have to do the mitzvah. You know, a person could philosophize about the Nerot Hanukkah, and he can buy the best oil, and he makes the nicest wick, and he prepares the most beautiful menorah, and he sets it up, and he sings all the songs, and he spins the dreidel, and he eats potato pancakes, and he does all the kavanot. But he forgets one thing, to light the menorah. He gets a zero on that test. Lo ha-midrash ikar, ela ma'aseh. The main thing is the action. But no, on the day that you do a mitzvah, where you do an action, it could be saying Birkat al-Libana. It could be doing a physical chesed of tzedakah. It could be praying. Those are all actions. Mitzvot are always active. Mitzvot must be active. At that moment, you have now fed your nefesh. That first element of the five elements of soul has now been satiated. You've given a certain elevation to nefesh. It's important to do that. Because nefesh left unnourished turns into something that's called nefesh bahamit. And nefesh bahamit is the animalistic part of you. When you don't feed nefesh, it spoils into what the Gemara calls ruach shetut. Did you ever hear the Gemara that said, if somebody commits an avera, must be, has entered inside of his system, ruach shetut. I always understood ruach shetut to mean temporary insanity. Ruach shetut. The Arizal says no. Ruach shetut is when the nefesh of a person is not nourished with mitzvot, that nefesh decays into something that's called ruach shetut, and that causes averot. So you need to make sure your nefesh is well hydrated. And the only way to hydrate a nefesh is through actions, through the mitzvah, the ma'aseh. And that's what they mean when they say mitzvah goredet mitzvah. Because you fed your nefesh, so it doesn't spoil into ruach shetut. But if a person's not doing mitzvot, the nefesh atrophies. And once it atrophies, then already it leads to averot. The animalistic part of it takes over. So therefore, if I had one advice, do mitzvot all day long. Just keep on doing actions, actions. Problem is, actions means you have to move. And human beings by nature are lazy. Human beings by nature are heavy. Kaved. And the inertia, the movement, to get up and move, is very difficult. But that's the challenge. Fine. But what about the other four parts? Well, the other four parts also are fed from mitzvot, but from different elements. Ruach, for example, Rabbeinu Ari says, the Ben Ishai says it as well, Ruach must be sustained from the verbal part of a mitzvah. Every mitzvah has a verbal part to it. For example, again, to the ladies, before you light Nerot Shabbat, you make a blessing. Baruch Atah Hashem. That blessing directly influences the Ruach. So you see, the blessing has two parts. Not only does it introduce the mitzvah that you're about to do, but you must verbalize the mitzvah. You must say, Ladlik Ner Shel Shabbat. Those magical words influence Ruach. Without it, you fulfill the benefit of Nefesh, but Ruach is deprived. The men make berachot before they put on talit and tefillin as well. Some of you might ask the obvious question, but hakam, there's certain mitzvot that there's no beracha. Kibud avim, for example. If your father tells you, bring me a glass of water, get me a coffee, there's no beracha. Asher kedesharam mustav sivanu al kibud avim. In that case, the tzaddikim, what they do is, while they're doing the mitzvah, they read the pasuk of that mitzvah. So as they're making the coffee, they say, kaved et avicha ve'et imecha. They must add a verbal to it. When they pay their workers, they say, biyomo titen secharo, and they pay the worker. Problem is, some of you are saying, Rabbi, I'm not like you, I don't know all the mitzvot by heart. So I'm going to walk around with a chumash in my hand, and every time I do a mitzvah, like a phone book, I have to find the appropriate mitzvah. By the time I find the mitzvah, the moon's going to get covered, the sun is going to be gone, I'm going to lose out on the mitzvah. Hakamim addressed this, and they said that there's a standard text that you should say before you do any mitzvah. V'hi no'am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu u'ma'asi adenu korena aleinu u'ma'asi adenu korenehu. V'hi no'am. It's in the Tehillim. That's an automatic. But remember, there always must be a verbal when you're doing a mitzvah. That's dibur. It is the dibur of the mitzvah that sustains ruach. But we didn't get to the neshama. The neshama is sustained by the rabbinical principle that says, mitzvot sirichot kavana. You need kavana. Mitzvot, for them to have the full impact on the person, they must be done with intent. You see, it's different than a vitamin. When I take a vitamin, I don't need to make any blessing on a vitamin, nor do I have to have kavanah. I don't have to say, I'm taking a vitamin C in order to just swallow it. The body will take care of all the rest. Whereas in a mitzvah, you need kavanah. This is our great challenge. If you're religious, we have a challenge. If you were not religious, this is easier for you. But if you were born religious, this is the challenge, because the repetitiveness of the mitzvah makes the mitzvah mechanical or robotic. It's almost like driving a car. Most of us don't have to think. That's why we can do so many other things when we're driving. which we shouldn't, but that's the nature, because it's so easy to drive, we can drive in our sleep. Now driving in your sleep is dangerous, but doing mitzvot in your sleep, that's unacceptable. Mitzvot tzidikot kavana. And since neshama is in the brain, I didn't tell you that, but I'll tell you that now. The neshama rests in the brain, right over here actually, in the cranium. This is where the neshama of a person is, right here. That's why the men, on the day of the bar mitzvah, they put tefillin shel rosh, right on the neshama, right in that spot. The ladies, maybe the wig, the clip is on that spot. I'm not exactly sure how they commemorate that. But nonetheless, there is a tikkun to the neshama. The tikkun to the neshama is only to kavanah. Kavanah is quite simple. As simple as it is, that's how difficult it is. For example, the kriyat shema, the kavanah is quite simple. Halakha mandates, you just have that kavanah in the first two lines. Shema and Baruch Shem Kevod. Now if you want to have, you know, more kavanah and vahavta, tavo ala beracha. But at least you have to be awake for Shema and Baruch Shem. And what's the kavanah that they ask you to have? Nothing major. Pirush HaMilim. Pirush HaMilim means the interpretation of the words. Shema Yisrael, understand Israel. I didn't know Shema means understand. I thought it means listen. So I see we don't even know the simple interpretation. Shema Yisrael, understand Israel. Shema, whatever it means. In the Amidah, the rabbis were very easy on us. They said, for an Amidah to be considered feeding your neshama, it must have kavanah in the first berakah. Now, if you want to have kavanah in all 18, tavo ala berakah. But for it to work, for it to sustain you, the first berakah. As easy as it is, that's how difficult it is. How much do we struggle just to have kavanah in the first berakah in the Amidah? And whatever it is, the 22 words. By the time we remember that we have to have kavanah, we're already in Barichenu. We're already in Oseh Shalom, before we realize even we're in Amidah. Not easy. But that's the challenge again. If you want to put yourself on this new diet that I'm presenting to you tonight, it's a regiment. No difference than walking on the treadmill and doing other things. It takes discipline. And part of the discipline of doing a mitzvah is doing it the right way. So you have to take each element of the mitzvah. The action, you must take it very seriously. The verbal, you must take it very seriously. And you must think, action, this is for my nefesh. The dibur, for my ruach. The kavanah, that's for my neshama. Now, where does the haya come in? Well, the haya, as I told you, not everybody has haya. Only because it's difficult to feed it. I'll tell you how you do it, but if you're interested, you know what the mashal would be like. Everybody can swim, but not everybody is an Olympic swimmer. There's a big difference between a swimmer and an Olympic swimmer. To get hayan yahida, you need to be on Olympic level. But I'll teach you at least how to do it. It's possible. In every mitzvah, there's basic kavanah, like I told you, the pirush hamilim, and then there's deeper kavanot. That might be the mystical part of the mitzvah, what's behind the surface. There's the pshat of the mitzvah, and then there's the sod of the mitzvah. There's some people, when they pray the Amidah, not only are they thinking of the simple interpretation of the words, but they're thinking of the Rashi Tevot, the Sofei Tevot, the Gematria, all the different configurations that are laid in inside. Well, the more a person is able to connect to the text in that element, that you feed Hayah. That's the deeper Kavanot. A simple example. Are you up to a simple example? Sure, so then I'll give you a simple example. But know that this is one of a million examples. If I were to ask you, shofar, not shofar, what is a shofar? Shofar is a biblical instrument. What's its purpose? Blow sounds, Rosh Hashanah from the Torah. You're right. So a shofar is basically the name of an instrument. No different than a clarinet or a saxophone or an oboe. This is called a shofar. Simple pshat, and you'd be right. And you tell me if you want the little more explicit, you'd say, it's a ram's horn. Fine, I accept. But if I were to tell you any reason why they call it a shofar, well, maybe shofar comes from the word shefoferet. Shefoferet means like a tube, a hollow tube. Well, a shofar is like a hollow tube. So maybe the root word of shofar is shefoferet. I accept. Or maybe you'll tell me the root word of shofar is leshaper, to better oneself. Because after all, the purpose of shofar is to better oneself when he hears the shofar. So minashon leshaper. But that's all pshat. And if you had that kavanah when they took out the shofar, and the rabbi made the beracha, leshmoa kol shofar, and you're thinking, shofar, the ram's on, leshaper, shefoferet, you've definitely enhanced your neshama. But you've done very little for your hayah. But if you were a real mechaven, and you were able to connect to higher level kavanot, you think of the following. Again, just as an example. You would think the following. The Ben Wari writes that one of the purposes that shofar accomplishes, it sweetens the judgments. It seems on Rosh Hashanah, which is Yom Hadin, there are three judgments that are manifest. And these three judgments need to be sweetened. You understand what I mean when I say sweetened? We need to mitigate them. Sometimes they have deal. If a person has a strong cup of coffee, he needs to put some sugar in the coffee just to make it drinkable, or a little milk to take the bitterness out. The judgments on Rosh Hashanah, there are three of them. They need to be sweetened. Don't ask me how, but the shofar has an uncanny ability at the time that we blow it to sweeten these three courts. And as a result, the rulings that come out of these courts become now mitigated. And they become mimutakim. What are the three courts? I'm going to tell you them. You might never heard of them, but I'll teach you them tonight. Again, as an example for what Haya is. Does anybody know the name of God that represents judgment? You're absolutely right. We live in a great generation. Even the ladies are able to answer before the men what the names of God represent. Nobody should think that our generation is bereft. Our generation has come along. My great-grandmother would not be able to answer that, although she was a great tzaddiket. Today the ladies know the Shemot. Elohim is correct. But you also know that there's two other ways I can configure the Elohim. One way is called Biribua. I will teach you the system of Ribua tonight. Ribua means you take the name Elohim and you write it like this. Aleph. Underneath it you write Aleph Lamed. Underneath that you write Aleph Lamed He. Underneath that you write Aleph Lamed He Yud. Underneath that, you write Aleph, Lamed, He, Yud, and Mem. You understand what we did? You might have heard of that. Nah, nah, nahma. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you do it with Elohim. That's the real one. Aleph, Aleph, Lamed, Aleph, Lamed, He, Aleph, Lamed. That's called Ribua. By the way, there's significance in writing the name of Hashem that way. that represents another form of justice, of divine justice. There's a third way how to configure the name Elohim, and that is called B'milui. Are you familiar with the system of Milui? Well, that's taking the letters, but filling them in. As example, an Aleph would be spelt Aleph Lamed Peh, Aleph. I'm spelling it out the way it sounds phonetically, Aleph. And then Lamed would be Lamed, Lamed Mem Dalet. Well, He could be spelled He Yud. Yud would be Yud Vav Dalet, Yud. And Mem is Mem Mem. So, congratulations. You learned the three different courts. One court is called Elohim. One court is called Elohim Biribua. And one court is called Elohim Bimilui. These are the three courts that we need to put sugar on in order to sweeten them. So we take the magical shofar. Well, if you go to the first name that I told you is Elohim. Elohim equals 86. That's why if you take the two middle letters of the word shofar, there's a vav and a peh. Circle it. That will sweeten the Elohim. Well, if you take the next name that I gave you, the Elohim Beribua, Aleph, Aleph Lamed, Aleph Lamed He, Aleph Lamed He Yud, and then Mem, numerically that'll equal 200. That's the Resh of Shofar. And then if you take the Elohim Beribua, Ta'iti, if you take the Elohim Bemilui, Aleph, Lamed, etc., that equals 300. That's the Sheen of Shofar. So in the word Shofar, you have the three courts. The Sheen, the Vav Peh, and the Resh. Now those that have that Kavanah, that's already mystical. That's already deep. So when you hear the Shema called Shofar, the regular guy's thinking, Shevoveret, the Shaper. And the deep person is thinking, the three Bate Dinim, the Sheen, the Vav, the Milui, the... And by the way, what I just told you is a drop in the bucket of the deeper kavanot. The more a person is mechaven, the more he enhances these parts of the soul. We have one more part, and that's called Yechida. How is Yechida enhanced? Which part of the mitzvah? We have nothing left. We did the action, we did the speech, we did the two forms of kavanot. What could be left? Ben Ari writes, probably the most important element of a mitzvah after the action. And that's called the attitude. Yechida is built up by the joy of the mitzvah. We call that the simcha of the mitzvah. Mitzvot, if they're done ideally, they must be done b'simcha. There must be an enthusiasm is correct, an exuberance, a joy, a vim, an excitement. Otherwise, you will never build up the Yechida. The great Tzaddikim, the reason why they have that fifth element is because all of the mitzvot that they accomplish, there's a great amount of joy in the mitzvah. Doing a mitzvah must not be like carrying a heavy luggage or paying a tax. It's difficult, however, to always be in a good mood. But the great Tzaddikim, when they did mitzvot, that element was very, very, very prominent. The Hafetz Chaim, when he would pay a worker, they would see him dancing in the middle of the night alone. I saw Tzaddikim after Birkat al-Lebana, they would be dancing to themselves. The great Tzaddikim, in the Gemara it says, a rabbi called Rav Bruna, he had a smile on his face from ear to ear. When they asked him, they said, Rabbi, why are you so happy today? He said, this morning I was able to pray Vatikin. I was able to pray the Amidah at sunrise. But Rabbi, that was 12 hours ago. Doesn't matter. The smile was plastered to his face the whole day. In the olden days, mitzvot gave a person a certain satisfaction of joy and happiness. And that's why the great Tzaddikim, they had that shine, that glow. That glow comes from Yechida. But it only comes from Simcha Shel Mitzvah. the excitement that you get when you're doing a mitzvah. Well, there you have it. Congratulations. You've now learned how to attach to God, Yudke Vavke, through a mitzvah, which is God. You've learned that that's your essence, and that's the way you get Hayim. The key of all this is to recognize that Hayim is not your physical part. Hayim is all the Naranhi. That is Hayim. And the only way to build up Naranhi is through mitzvot. No other way. Not through music, not through yoga, not through art, not through hallucinating drugs. The only way to build up Naranhi is through the performance of mitzvot. That's why they're so key, they're so essential, they're so pivotal to Judaism. If that's the case, we go further. There's an interesting halakha. I don't think anybody will ever ask this question, so I don't think it's a practical halakha, but it's in Shulchan Aruch. It's in the laws of Shofar. The laws of Shofar are in Siman Taf Kuf Pe Vav. You say, well, how does the rabbi remember that? I'm not such a smart guy, but it's an easy way to remember that. Because Taf Kuf Taf is 400, and Kof is 100. That's 500. And Pe Vav is 86. The Shulchan Aruch did us a favor. He put the laws of Shofar in Siman 586. Because the numerical value of the word Shofar is also 586. So therefore, he put Shofar in Siman Taf Kuf Pe Vav. Gematria Shofar. Anyway, if you look over there in Taf Kuf Pe Vav, in Halakha Yud Bet, I don't have an image for Yud Bet, why it's there. But it's in Yud Bet. A strange halakha. There the halakha says, what if somebody blows a shofar within a shofar? I mean, this is like a magic trick. He has a shofar, and he takes another shofar and puts it in the shofar, and he blows a shofar within a shofar. Does it count or not? Shulchan Aruch says, it counts only if the inner shofar extends out on both sides. You understand the halakha? If the inner shofar is longer than the outer shofar, that means the inner shofar extends out on both sides, then it's okay, even though it's covered. But since it extends outward on both sides, kasher. And I say, of course you're not going to ask such a question. Who would blow a shofar within a shofar? We have a difficult time blowing one shofar, let alone not to blow a shofar within a shofar. But that's the halakha. I once saw one of the great hakamim say that there's an ethical lesson to this halakha. The shofar within a shofar represents the human being. After all, we're a body within a body. Our outside is the physical. Inside is the naranhi. So basically we're made up of two bodies, one spiritual and physical, together. One on the inside, one on the outside. The inside being the major one. When is a shofar kasher? When the inner one extends. That means as long as the inner shofar is longer, that means it's more prominent, it's more noticeable, then already the shofar is kasher. Meaning, of course you have to have a physical part, but as long as your main tilt, your main focus, your main objective is to satisfy the inner, so that's the longer part of the person, the naranhi must extend out from both sides. That must be his ikar. As long as that's the ikar, so then he's fine. So there's a message behind that halakha. Well, if we got to this understanding, we come now to a very big secret. And the secret is, what's the secret of the shofar? Why do we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Well, to be honest with you, Harambam says, don't spend so much time. It's Gezerat Melech. The shofar is a chok. Torah doesn't tell us why to blow shofar. There have been so many reasons given, but know that the Torah does not give any reason. Torah says you must blow the shofar because I said so. However, there are reasons given by the Hachamim. Harambam writes, it's a wake-up call. Wake up, you sleepy heads. Those that are involved in the frivolities of life and have lost their way in the nonsensical, meaningless things. He calls that Havle Hazman. The shofar is supposed to wake a person, shake him in his boots, in order to realign him on the proper track. And I ask a simple question on Harambam. How does it do that? How does the shofar wake me up to put me back on track? How come my alarm clock doesn't do it then? I mean, how come when you hear the fire engine come, also as a siren? No, that doesn't do anything. But take this strange biblical instrument, blow these odd sounds. No, that's going to wake you up. Why should that wake you up more than any other sound? But he said, no, that's the purpose. Udu Yishanim. What's the depth? I have an understanding based on Maharal. You know what I said to myself? I said, imagine when Adam was created, Adam Arishon. Well, Adam was created from dirt and water. It's almost like a cake, flour and water. But they all have fashioned it, like a challah. But Adam Arishon was dead. Dirt and water makes something that's unalive. It's just a sculpture. Adam had no animation until the Torah comes along and says, God, well, the way I would say it in the vernacular today, God gave Adam Arishon not mouth to mouth resuscitation, but according to the Torah, it was mouth to nose. Vayipach be'apav. God went into Adam Arishon and he blew into him. What did he blow into him? The Ranaranchi. He blew in an Aranchi. He blew in the Nefesh. Because he was born Bar Mitzvah already. He wasn't born a baby. Adam Arishon was born speaking already. Adam Arishon was born in Gan Eden. He got all five parts. And then Adam Arishon becomes alive. What does that teach you? What makes you alive is your inside, not your outside. Because he had the outside, but the outside didn't give him any life. Once he was blown into him, his essence, now the Pasuk says, Adam became Hayim. That's a great lesson to teach your kids, that it is the breath of life that comes from God on the inside, not what you got from your parents on the outside. And which better day of the year if we can give that lesson to ourselves than on Rosh Hashanah? Because on Rosh Hashanah, that's when it happened. That's when Adam was created, on Rosh Hashanah. And that's when God blew in that spirit of Naranchi into Adam. That would be a great reminder. If I had to make a speech in my congregation on Rosh Hashanah, that would be the theme of my speech. Rabotai, remember not the creation of Adam, but remember the breath of Naranchi that was blown into Adam. But then I say, you know what? I have a better idea. Instead of making a speech, imagine we could have a theater, and we could have a charade, and we could have a movie to depict that. Well, a picture speaks more than 1,000 words. So we have a tradition. The Hazan stands up on the Teva and he takes the shofar. And what does he do with the shofar? He blows into the shofar. The blowing that air into the shofar, at that moment the Maral says, in Shamayim Borei Olam, is recreating the blowing of the spirit of the Naranchi into Adam HaRishon on the exact day of the anniversary of his birth. And therefore when we see the blowing of that hollow air into that shofar, that reminds us that it's not the external, it's what's inside. The air that's inside this hollow tube, that's the essence. And it reminds us of the creation of Adam HaRishon, not physical body, but spiritual body. At that moment over there, Rambam says it wakes us up. Because it wakes us up to remember, you are more than a physical. And if you think that all you are is physical, then you're no different than a fish out of water. Now we understand when we're praying for Hayim, God, give us real Hayim. Give us the ability to build our insides. Give us the opportunities to do mitzvot. Let us overcome our inclination. Let us overcome our laziness. Let us overcome our culture, our society, that we should be able to sustain the main part of us. Last but not least, although there's much more to say, consider this part one of a seven-part series of explaining what the secret of life is. But this is enough to digest for the first session. You have what to sleep on. And that's why on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, our custom is that we leave the synagogue and we make tashlich. And everybody supposedly goes in front of the body of water and shakes their lapel, and all their sins are supposed to fall out into the water. But in the water, there's fish. The Chachamim were so smart, they wanted you to see fish on Rosh Hashanah. They said, you see the fish? Those fish are very quiet, they're in the water. That's the goal. They're very quiet. And then you remind yourself, when that fish is taken out, you start to think that they're alive, and then you realize that that's only a life that's called the living dead. That's the Sha'im B'Hayyehem Nikra'im Metim. That form of life is not life. They wanted to remind you of that mashal of the fish not out of water, but the fish in the water, which is the tzaddik. My blessing to all of you is, now that you know the secret of matzvah, which is yudke vavke, you know the magic of the five parts of your soul, and you know how to accomplish it now. You've been given tonight a prescription of the spiritual. My blessing to you then is that you'll be able to take, and all of us, including the speaker, certainly, be able to take this advice. We'll be able to perform the mitzvot b'maaseh, b'dibur, b'kavana yetera, u'b'simcha, and then b'azat Hashem will be zocheh to the blessing that we say, ve'atem hadebekim, badonai Elohechem, hayim kolechem hayom, amen ve'amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay in your...